Good evening, everybody, and welcome. I'm Donna Cease. I'm our Acting Spiritual Programs Coordinator at Kadampa Center, and welcome to our weekend retreat with Venerable Amy Miller on transforming negative emotions. I have a couple of announcements to make before we begin. If you come to the Kadampa Center regularly, you're accustomed to our tradition here at Geshe-la's request. We generally prostrate with him, but really traditionally out of respect for the teacher, we wait until the teacher has prostrated and taken her seat before we begin prostration, so we want to do that tonight. Want to make you aware that Venerable Amy will be leading a Lam Rim retreat at the end of July at the Garrison Institute in New York, and there are some informational flyers about that out on the bulletin board and on the front desk. Just a reminder that we have a part of our program tomorrow is a potluck lunch. Don't forget to bring something delicious to eat, and we always need helpers with setup and cleanup. So, Tim here, raise your hand, Tim. Tim's our setup master. He can tell you what to do. Just a reminder that at Kadampa Center, another tradition we have is that we offer the Dharma always at no cost, at no charge, so that anyone who wants to hear these beautiful teachings can do so without any financial barriers. But we do have costs associated with it. So if you are moved to offer a donation to the Kadampa Center to help with our costs, that would be very welcome. Also, it's always auspicious and welcome to make an offering to the teacher. You can do that. We'll have an opportunity to do that at the end of Sunday's teachings, but it's appropriate to do that at the end of any of the programs if you would like to. And we have envelopes by the door if you would like to do that. Thank you.
Sāshī pārkī shūshīng mētok tāmrī sāblīshī nīdē yēn pārē
So, what I wanted to mention about the refuge prayer, if it's okay to take a moment to, a lot of you are familiar with this basic Buddhist prayer. Once you take refuge in Buddhism, and what that means is you're acknowledging this as your path, as your spiritual path, But we, and these are four lines that we normally would say in the morning three times and in the evening three times, once you've taken refuge, okay? But, and when you say them before a teaching, it's slightly different, which I'll explain, but the essence of it is, I go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, okay? The Buddha, the historical Buddha. Okay, on another level, the omniscient mind is what you're taking refuge in. The Dharma, I take refuge in the Dharma. On one level, it's the teachings. Okay, on another level, it's the teachings that truly free us from suffering, and those are the teachings on emptiness, the nature of reality. We take refuge in the Sangha jewel, the Sangha, and the Sangha is your spiritual community, like a center like this, like the Kadampa Center. And on another level, the Sangha are those who've had a direct perception of emptiness, the nature of reality. The Arya Sangha, they're then called. The Arya Sangha. So why do we want to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? What's the main thing? And what happens is, I think for a number of you, probably everyone in this room, is we suffer in some way, right? Is there anybody here that doesn't suffer? You know, we have small ways we suffer, big ways we suffer. We suffer. And what happens is sometimes you reach a point in your suffering when it is too much. It is just too much. You've had enough. Okay, it could be anything. Could be anything. And so what happens is you turn, and we're going to talk about this weekend, but you turn to certain coping mechanisms, right, and resources. And just, can you give me an example? When you suffer at any level in your life, what do you do? I'm just curious. Anybody? I know it's Friday night and you don't want to be the first one to speak. It's all scary. But I think enough of you know each other, right? What happens when things are going, you know, less than perfect for you? What do? Yeah.
Work harder.
You work harder. How many of you are workaholics? Okay. Yeah. So we throw ourselves into our work. Or you work harder to try to get out of the suffering, but sometimes it manifests in too much work, right? Wouldn't you say? What else do you do?
Crawl back into bed.
Crawl back into bed, right? You know, denial, okay? And just total repression and I'm not suffering. Like, I don't want to deal with it.
Binge-watch Netflix to escapism.
Thank you. You are a very honest group. I like this. You know, some groups I come into and I'll just say, what do you do when you're suffering? And they'll say, oh, I do my prayers. You know, I meditate, you know. Like, yeah, we do that. Some people do that. But we binge-watch Netflix. Yes, we do. We eat chocolate. You make love. You drive your car really late at night, really fast late at night. You know, you raid your refrigerator. We get lost in music and movies and sports events, and you go to the gym and you work out for 7 hours straight, or, you know, this is what we do. Or you yell at somebody is another, you know, these are just the standard things we do. And then you fortunately have a center like this near you, a fantastic center, with a wonderful Geshe, a couple Geshes, and it's just fantastic. And then, so at least you have some resources now, easily accessible in your language, or in English at least, that start to say, well, you know, there's something else you could do for support. Okay, so this is what refuge is about. Refuge is where do you seek protection from more suffering. Okay. Now, granted, we have old patterns that we seek protection from some unhealthy sources because, why? We were familiar with doing that. So as soon as something goes down, you know, there I am in the checkout line with the Snickers bar. That's going to make me feel good. It does make you feel good temporarily. Absolutely. That's okay. But don't think this is the lasting source of that's going to take care of your suffering. It doesn't. And then when you get out of bed, the problem's still there. Okay, when you finish the Netflix, when the movie ends, the problem's still there. Okay, so the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you have to check for yourself, and I will ask you, please, everything I'm saying, I ask you to thoroughly investigate. Okay, don't just because I'm a Buddhist nun and I have a, you know, shaved head and wear maroon, believe it, please. I love this path because they asked me to investigate. Everything has to be your experience. So you have to a little bit understand the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Is it really an infallible source of protection for me for more suffering? You check. And you can check by reading about their qualities in the books, The teachers here teach about their qualities, and you kind of try on these teachings. You have to cook them yourself, okay, and say, yeah, you know, last time I tried that, and then I actually was really depressed, but instead I got out a book on emptiness, and I started reading a little bit, and wasn't really depressed anymore. Okay, so those of you, some of you are here for various afflictions. We're going to talk about those. Somebody talked to me today about anxiety. So anxiety is something we'll talk about. We'll also talk about depression and anger and frustration and attachment and jealousy and fear. And anybody have any of those things going on? Right? Okay, these are our things. This is what we do, right? So what I wanted to mention is we will chip away. Some of them have some antidotes in general and some are more specific. But the one thing I'll keep talking about is emptiness, because that cuts all of them. And from my own experience, I know sometimes I go to this very remote place to do retreat in Nepal. And the first couple times I went there alone, the first time you're alone with your mind for an extended period, you know, for a few months maybe, it was really disarming. It was like, it was me and my mind, right? And it was a bit shocking what was in my mind, you know, the garbage heap of my mind. So I would get depressed sometimes. And there was only about 3 people that lived on that side of the mountain, and 13,000 feet, a place called Laudo, beautiful, amazing place called Laudo. And so then I would start sinking. I'd notice in the break times, and then I could just, they have a library there, and I would read some of the, even just sometimes a passage on emptiness or something, and I'd notice how it just was like, even just reading, even if I didn't understand it fully, the space opened up. It was just suddenly like, oh, I can deal with this. This is very interesting. So again, I ask you to please investigate what I'm saying, and then we'll have a good time, okay? So thank you very much. So the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is the first part of this formula. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, okay? The second part is, by the virtuous merits that I create, by practicing giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha so I can benefit all others. Okay, so when it talks about this, the one you'd say on your own would be by the virtuous practice, the merit I create by practicing giving and other perfections. That's what you say when you're doing the refuge prayer on your own. And we normally put our hands in the prostration mudra because it's a little bit more respectful, a little bit more oomph to it. Okay? And when we do that, we put our thumbs in between so that your hands are never empty. It's not like an empty offering. It's not like a yoga mudra. Yoga hands. Like, so you never want to have your hands empty. It creates, it's like the jewel in the lotus. Okay, it's like a lotus flower. Okay? And then what you do is before teaching, though, you'd say, by the merit I create by listening to the Dharma. So it's slightly, in the Tibetan, it's slightly different. Jiningi pe sonamki, like that. So we have the Tibetan, right? So maybe we'll read once together in English and then we'll chant it twice in the Tibetan so you get the sense, those of you who are a little newer. Thank you.
Okay, it's on page 98, right below the same page that we were on. Okay, I go for refuge
until I am enlightened
to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create by listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings.
Oh, Sangye Chodan Tsoki Chonam La Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyab Suchi Sangye Jeningi Pe Sonam Gi Chola Penchu Sangye Drupar Jo Sangye Chodan Tsoki Chonam La Chanchu Badu Dagni Kyab Suchi Dagi chen ningi pe so nam gi cho la pen che sangye ju pa jo. So let's take a moment and just sit together. So find that comfortable posture for your body. And the most important part of a meditation posture is to have your spine as extended as possible, as if the back is straight. If it's possible to not lean too heavily against the back of your chair, your back will become strong the more you sit like that. And it's perfectly fine to meditate in a chair. Just have your feet straight down so the body is balanced. Some people place their palms face up in their lap around the level of the navel with the thumbs touching, right palm on the left. Or however is comfortable for you, head slightly tipped forward, eyes are lightly closed or slightly open. Focus towards the tip of the nose. Lips are lightly together. And just allow your body to settle into this posture. And as you bring yourself more fully into this space, letting go of the events of your day and week, just bring your awareness now to the top of your head, to your crown, we're going to slowly work our way down through our body, releasing any tension we're holding. So relax your brow and the side of your head and your ears. Keep a normal breath moving through your system, but it shouldn't be too loud to disturb the person next to you. Relax your face and the back of your head. And just release any tension you might be holding in your jaw. Relax your neck and shoulders, where we store a lot of tension. Make sure your shoulders are not up by your ears. Relax your arms. Release any tension you find you're holding in your elbows, forearms, the wrists. And just allow any tension to move out your hands and fingers. Relax your torso, so your chest, your back, and release any tension you find you're holding in your waist and your hips. Relax your buttocks and your thighs. And just breathe some space into your knees and release any tension in your calves and your shins. Relax your ankles and let any tension move all the way out your feet and toes. And just bring yourself to as relaxed a place as possible. So now we want to look at the posture of the mind. All of our various thoughts and distractions of the day and week. Everything is busying around in there, in our consciousness. So what's really helpful, not only before we start a class, but any activity we do, is to set a positive intention. So it directs all of our awarenesses towards something possibly more virtuous, planting deep seeds of that in our mind, which will only benefit us and help us to benefit others. So just take a moment to consider why you came here this evening. And if you can expand that idea or that reason to think that from the information you might get, maybe you could help others with that information as well as yourself. So see if you can expand your purpose for being here a bit beyond your own boundaries, if it's not already like that, and take a moment to set a positive intention for this time. And bring your awareness to your breath, a normal, natural breath. And if you can focus on the space just outside the nostrils, where the air enters and leaves the body, or focus on the rising and falling of your abdomen, whichever is more comfortable for you. Keep all of your attention focused there, as long as you can. If a distraction comes, simply observe without any further elaboration or judgment. And with gentleness directed towards yourself, bring your mind back to the breath. Please relax. Slowly open your eyes. Okay, I got my marching orders here. End 8:30. Okay. Got it. Okay. What I'd like to do, the way I tend to teach, and if you're too far in the back and you can't, you want to come up further, there is room here, so feel free if you want to move a chair up or sit closer, that's fine. I tend to tailor classes to the people that are here, and I know there's a lot of people here, but I want to make it most useful for you. So there is time for participation, and I will ask questions and things like that. We will also do some meditation together throughout the couple of days. We have almost a couple of days or a day and a half. So I really want to thank you, first of all, for coming, spending this time. I'd like to thank the Kadampa Center and Robbie and Kim and Donna and also Don, for who started the center, and Geshe Gelick, and I just want to thank all the people that have been involved for all the years that this center has grown, and it's fantastic. So I want to just thank everybody for creating the center and being here, and Annie Luz for being Annie Luz. Thank you so much. So I'm delighted to be back. And so one of the things, so I will engage you a little bit if you don't have to answer things, but I just would like to also make this useful. So this is a course on transforming disturbing emotions. And we will be addressing the things that I'd mentioned. And if we get some time, I'm not sure if we will, I want to talk a little bit about the 8 verses of thought training. And so I just want to get an idea from you, how many of you have been around the Dharma a little bit, practicing for 3 or more years? If you just put your hand up. Okay, so we've got a number of newer people here. So if there's something that you don't understand a word, and if you don't understand my accent or my English, just put your hand up, but I will make time for questions as well. So if you have your hand up at some point, I might actually tell you to wait if I'm right in the middle of something. Okay, and then we will have time for questions. And the other thing is, it's got to be it's a very short visit, I'm sorry. I'd like to come, if I came in the future, maybe for something longer. But it was very jammed up with different meetings with different people. So if you do want to talk personally about something a little deeper that you don't want to air in front of people, there is a little bit of time to do that. But what I wanted to say is sometimes you have a question that you could ask in front of others, and the reason is it could benefit many people. So it's something to think about. And the other thing I wanted to mention, if you do, I think there's somebody handling some appointments, and I know I have a little bit of time Saturday after the program, and I may have some more time Sunday later in the day, like that. But the main thing is you want to do is you want to be clear about your question. I don't need a lot of history, because people spend the time talking a long, long story. It's not really necessary. I've learned that from my teachers. So if I need more information, I'll ask you, but it's best to keep it directed towards your practice and a serious life question or a health issue or something like that. Okay, so it's best, and this is just in general, if for other teachers that are you know, much more senior to me and things, is you don't go in and like, what color car should I buy? You know, it's good to have to start off with good habits. Okay, you'd be surprised what people ask teachers. It's amazing. So, and I don't have all the answers at all. So I just wanted to say I'm a pretty ordinary person. I am a nun. I've been ordained 15 years. But I'm a pretty regular person, and I do teach on a practical level. I'm not any holy being. I'm teaching at the request of my teachers, and I love to teach, so I mainly really hope that there's something that's imparted that's useful. And if it's not, I'd say just put it to the side like that. So thank you very much for coming. So I wanted to just ask you, as we did a short meditation, first of all, for those of you that are new, this is exactly how I start off practice. There's no magical mystery tour of how do I get a meditation practice started. So, and I really encourage you, one of the greatest counters for negative emotions, for any imbalance in the mind, is to get a meditation practice going consistently. I know it's hard. I've been there. It's really hard to start it. So the first thing is to get proper instruction. There's some wonderful books that are great guides, and there's a lot of stuff online now. So make sure you get the accurate stuff, stuff that's from a good teacher, that's a good thing like that. And then the main thing is trying to really find a consistent time in the day that you are going to get on your cushion or your chair or your seat. And you can make a little place in the house, and it doesn't have to be some fancy elaborate altar. I know people that, you know, when I get, you know, the pay raise, then I'm going to buy the table, and then it'll never happen. You know, my first altar was a cardboard box turned upside down with a scarf on it. So seriously, the main thing is you don't need anything. Just sit down and look at your mind. Sit down and look at your mind, but it's nice to get a little bit of instruction, and we just started there. Relax your body. I see people, they sit down, okay, now I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. Relax. Relax. We are not a relaxed culture. We're just not. It's one real detriment about the United States. And then I do meet people that come to meditation retreats, and Americans are we're some of the toughest. You know, we really grind ourselves, okay? And the thing is, we are wonderful people, Americans. So we have so much potential and incredible intelligence and, you know, perfect conditions. But we come into retreats and we're like, you know, now I'm meditating. Like, no, it's not supposed to be like that, really. So I know it's hard work, but honestly, Reba Rinpoche, one of my gurus, passed away. He's now, the reincarnation is 9. He's amazing. In December, I stay with him in India when I go to these teachings with the Dalai Lama. He's extraordinary. But Reba Rinpoche in his past life, some of you may have met him, right? He was amazing. And he led us on many meditation retreats when I was living in California. And he said, you know, in order to meditate well, you have to completely disengage your nervous system, which means you have to be relaxed. And then it comes organically. So some ways of having all this tight, rigid, you know, and then what happens is you live with somebody. How many of you live with somebody? Yeah, a lot of people do, right? And then you kind of tell your partner who's not here tonight, and they're not into Buddhism, okay, but I'm going to do a little meditation. And you're afraid what they're going to say. And maybe they judge you and they don't like it. But okay, you got your little room and your little closet or whatever, a corner of a room. It doesn't have to be much. Just not a heavily trafficked place. But you got your little seat, whatever. You know. And then sometimes they're bothering you or something there. And then you slam the door and they say, I'm meditating now. Okay. So again, we have to... Like, this is indulging yourself. Give yourself that chance to... But let it go, let the week go, let the day go. And it could be you wake up in the morning, a lot of people like to meditate in the morning, great. And you let the night, whatever happened, I didn't sleep well, let it go. It's all a process of letting go. Letting all that go. You know, and then I'm okay, I'm here. Because my meditation cushion now over years, it's for me, it's coming home. I like that space. I like that space. I do. I've done my hardest work in that space, but it's a good space for me. And the other thing is I'm familiar with it now. And when you get familiar with stuff, you're comfortable with them. And that's what you want to do. Eventually be comfortable there where you go back and you go, you know, I just chewed out my boss today. Had a big fight with my mother. Had a, whatever. And then you go back to your cushion. And that's a place where you fix it. And it's possible to fix it. You can fix everything. Okay? So that's what's exciting about this. It's not something out there, and it's not that you have to go into that church that's in southern France, and you don't have to climb Mount Everest to do any of this. It's you and your mind. Okay? And it's real, and it's happening now. Okay? So when you sit just now, and what you do is you sit, give a little time. We just did it together. You relax the body. Okay? And then you go, well, how's my mind? Sometimes your mind is going to be completely uncooperative. That's normal. Sometimes you're going to feel pretty good. That's normal. That's how the human mind is, right? And when I was on last summer, I had the good fortune to do some retreat, a few months retreat, a little longer, and I just did some retreat in May, a short one, and it's great because I could see that every day it's the same. It's my mind. I didn't turn into somebody else overnight, but every day it was different, right? So we're unforgiving to ourselves when it's less than generous, our mind. Why? Sometimes that's my mind. I'm a nun, and sometimes my mind is full of garbage. So if I'm going to get angry with myself, I've missed the point, really, of being a nun and what I'm doing here. It's kind of like, sometimes I'm angry, right? Sometimes I'm sleepy. Sometimes I'm really alert and happy. That's me. I accept it. I accept it. I fold it all into the practice. So we have to have that patience to do that dance with ourselves. And you don't really get a sense of the dance until we quiet ourselves down and start to look at our minds in meditation. And then everything else is also built on the study of Buddhism, the readings in Buddhism, the practice of Buddhism, coming to the center, doing pujas. Well, you know, it's all part of the formula, basically. But I find so much of it built on that meditation practice that to somehow try to get that started. And there's no method of you have to do an hour. No. Some people get it 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening. They have a motivation. So what I do is after you got the posture of the body and you feel somewhat comfortable and experiment with cushions, okay, different sizes of cushions. I can't sit on the round cushions. I sit on a little corner like that. Everybody's body's different. Some people need a high thing. Some people want to sit in a chair. If you are really racked in pain, you can try lying down. I knew one person that had to lie. They had terrible back problem. I can't meditate like that because I go to sleep. So just practical. I'll go right to sleep. So again, be practical. If you need to lean against something, then do it. So that gets you, mainly you just want to be comfortable posture. Okay, and then you check the mind. So from there, I want to set a motivation. Okay, that's the posture of my mind. I want to direct that energy. I want to get it going in a positive direction, even when I don't feel good. You know, even when I'm really upset about something, sometimes I can just adjust that negative thought by checking my motivation, establishing a motivation. Okay, and in this tradition, our motivation, as many of you know, is focused on getting enlightened, reaching a fully awakened state. Buddha means awakened being, awakened one, fully awake. So you want to be fully awake, and the reason is when you're fully awake, you're omniscient, you're all-knowing, you're free of all fears, you have basically manifest infinite compassion, wisdom, loving-kindness. And what you do with that is your interest is to lead all other beings to that place, to benefit all other beings. You know, probably everybody in here wants to help others. I would have a feeling that's probably true. Okay. And when you do it, don't you feel limited? Don't people seek advice from you, family members, friends? What should I do? What should I do? Right? And what do? You tell them. You give them some advice, right? How does that work? Doesn't work. Doesn't work for them. Why not?
Difference of opinion.
Okay. Other people. When people come to you and you give advice, what happens in general? They don't take the advice. They don't listen to you anyway, right? Okay. But the other thing is, don't you feel limited? Like sometimes I don't know what to say. You know, I'll say to somebody, well, this is what... So we base it on the level of our wisdom, compassion. I advise from whatever I know, but sometimes I don't really know if that's going to do it for them. Right? So as Buddha, you're unlimited. You know. Capital K, you know. Because you're omniscient. Right? It's amazing level of mind. It's inconceivable space of mind. Like that. Okay, so basically we want to reach that place. This is our premise in Tibetan Buddhism. But again, feel how you relate to that. Like, do you want to unlimitedly help others? Maybe some people don't. Be honest with yourself. Okay. But you set a motivation. And the next thing I would do is come back to the breath. Morning, afternoon, evening, whenever you do it, A lot of people have the bookends around the day, morning and evening. I like this, because why in the morning? Sometimes I just settle my mind in the morning. I've got my motivation and a little bit of the breath. And I find people that once they start it, you know, once they start it going, when they miss a day, even that little bit of the motivation, you know, aren't you cranky that day? You're a little off kilter, right? Okay, so some people like that going. What they do in the evening, whether it's before you go to bed, before you eat dinner, after you eat dinner, someplace, is they reflect then, oh, here I am back in my space now, my seat, and I had a motivation this morning to, you know, do whatever I was doing. My motivation in the morning is, can I direct all the activities that I do with my body, speech, and mind throughout the entire day as much as I'm able towards moving me in a direction that will get me to a fully awakened state as quickly as possible so I can be of the most benefit to all others. I have a motivation like that in the morning, something like that, okay? So then I come back in the evening, let's say, and then I evaluate, and sometimes it's like I never thought about my motivation again. That's normal, right? Especially when you're new. I have this motivation, but I never thought about it. I went through my whole day, so now you're thinking about it. That's exciting. Now I'm thinking about it again. Two times this day I thought about it. If you want to think about it more during the day and you're newer, then leave yourself reminders, post-its, have your phone ring. People have reminders on their phone, right? Sounds on their phone. Remind yourself, oh, my motivation. I know somebody that has it on their desk, their thing. So they came in, they had a little problem with their boss, came back to them, and there was the thing. And put it in your own words. It doesn't have to say motivation. It could say love. I know somebody that has on the dashboard of their car death, because that helps them drive better. Seriously. Okay, so I'm saying this is your exercise. This is your practice. You don't have to do it like everybody else. It's like put it into something that's going to motivate you to be mindful, to remember. Okay? And then so they came back to the thing, and there was their little tickler. I think theirs said something like loving kindness. And then they went, oh, I had a thing with my boss. Oh, wait, right. So their motivation was about benefiting all living beings, to become a Buddha to benefit all living beings. Emphasis on the all. Okay? So how many of you have ever met Lama Zopa Rinpoche? Been to a teaching by him? Okay. So you know the way Rinpoche speaks, and you can go online and watch some of his videos. So the way Rinpoche speaks, so sometimes Rinpoche, Light of the Path retreat that's in Asheville that you guys host, which I'm so grateful to you for. It's been amazing. And then Rinpoche will say, all sentient beings. All sentient beings. So what happens for most of us is, yeah, I want to benefit all living beings except the jerk at work. Right? But seriously, so you can't leave somebody out of the equation. It's all living beings. That's what Tibetan Buddhists are doing, all living beings. So this person would come back to their desk and then say, oh, right, and my boss. Like, I have to, in fact, and we'll talk about why that person is so precious as well. Okay. So then what you can do in the evening, motivation again, oh, I missed it, okay, well. But the first thing you get to do after you set a little motivation again for this little package of practice, and it could be 5 minutes, then you reflect on everything that went well that day, meaning what you did well during the day. It can be small. I genuinely thank somebody that, you know, I specifically went back to them to thank them for this thing they did, that I appreciated them. I got somebody a flower today. I let somebody in their car in front of me. These are good things that you did. So not in an unbalanced, egomaniacal way, but you can acknowledge, that was a good thing I did. I'm really glad I did that. Right? Think of as many as you want to think of. Give yourself some time for rejoicing. It's a really important part of practice. Because the next moment, you'll be focused on what didn't go so well. Okay? And then you can reflect a little bit. I was short with so-and-so. You know, I was speeding in my car and kind of cut that person off. I could have let the woman in front of me in the supermarket line, but I didn't feel like it. I was just thinking about myself. I wanted to get out of there. She had one thing of mayonnaise, but no. Okay? Really? Okay. But the thing is, it's like, okay, so I did that. You know? What I'll do is I'm going to focus tomorrow on being a little bit more patient, or have a little bit more, I'm going to do a little, go out of my way a little bit for somebody else to counter that situation. Okay? But my mind in this space is even and balanced. I'm going to talk about this in a minute. Even and balanced as I do it. And now, in my evening practice, I'm going to do some Vajrasattva meditation. And they can teach you how to do that here in the center. It's a fantastic practice. Oh, no, we have the books here, right? The booklets?
Yes.
Are we doing that here? No, that's the retreat in July. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up. We can do that here. We'll see. It's a great practice, but they can teach you that here. I think you have a practice group that's doing it.
We have a retreat coming up.
Perfect. Okay, that's the thing you all need to be doing. Okay, but what you do is, this is a practice of purification. So when we mess up, which we do all the time, then what we like to do is we get down on ourselves and we obsess about it over and over and over. But what happens is we do Vajrasattva practice. This is what cuts it, and this purifies anything. So most of us that have been practicing for a while do this every night, because it just minimizes whatever I messed up that day. And I don't have to carry guilt around and say, well, I should. No, I did my Vajrasattva practice. There's a visualization. There's a mantra you can learn. It's a long mantra, but take the time. When you recite things out loud, you will memorize them. If you don't say them out loud, you won't. Okay? So take the time to learn it right, the right syllables. Do it slowly. It will get faster and faster. Eventually you'll memorize it, and then you can do the visualization more easily. Very powerful practice with a beautiful deity named Vajrasattva. I think that's Vajrasattva back there. Is that Vajrasattva or Tara? Oh, that's a Tara. It looks a little bit like a Vajrasattva. You don't have one. Okay. So it's a beautiful, and again, there's little pocket practice books you can get for free. I can tell you more about that, but, you know, you can do something like that. And then what you do is you do that practice well, finish, it doesn't have to take long, and then dedicate the merit. So you'd motivate before an activity, dedicate in the end, which we'll do at the end of our sessions. And there's the beginning of a practice right there. So it's not any magical kind of mysterious thing that you can't learn how to do. Okay? It's very accessible to everyone. So I want to ask you now, when we just meditated briefly on the breath, stay focused on the breath, I'm just curious, and some people are newer, any experiences you were having? What's happening? Nothing's happening. Okay. Okay.
I was thinking about cleaning out the garage.
Okay. Yep, thinking of cleaning out the garage. How many people were off in other thoughts? Yeah. Anybody have lists happening? Yep. And when your mind went off to the garage and these other thoughts, then what were the next thoughts when you noticed it off? Anybody, what was happening? You start over, okay. Other people? You? You felt anxious? Okay. Why did you feel anxious? Okay, you can't be in peace. Your mind is agitated. How many people felt like that? And how many had a boomerang going on in the mind? Bang, 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 right? Okay. And you had, you were going to say?
I just reminded myself to go back to my breath.
Great. And like back there when you said, I went back. Okay. This is meditation. Oh, I'm over here. Back to the breath. This is a type of meditation called placement meditation. Placement meditation. Our minds are not trained to stay on one thing. A lot of us are multitaskers. There's nothing wrong with that. However, sometimes you need to rest your mind from multitasking, seriously. It doesn't always lend to mindfulness, multitasking. And as you get older, you start forgetting more things. I mean, but seriously, okay? So there are times I need to multitask, and then there's times, take a break. And what happens is you're exercising your mind in different ways. So part of it is multitasking. Whoa! Ultra expansion. I can do this, I can do this. And some people are actually not good multitaskers. That's okay, too. You know, there's no good or bad to this. It's you getting to know your mind. Okay? So some people, I know people that they can only do one thing at a time. You know, I love that trait because I'm not usually like that. So I marvel at them. I'll be like, how do you do that? You look, he's just doing one thing. I did meet a very successful businessman once. And he, when he was asked about how he did it, he said that, I do one thing at a time. So he actually scheduled his day with these increments of what he was going to work on. So if a call came in, is he basically had a time he returned phone calls. But if the call didn't fit into what was actually happening or he wasn't waiting for the call as part of the program of that 20-minute period or 40-minute period or hour, he didn't take the phone call. Right. Now, some of us with our jobs, we don't have that luxury. But you can somewhat control a little bit of that. And I know people, I don't know how many of you, I work sometimes with people on a little bit life coaching stuff, right? And organizing stuff. So someone I know had their computer, their desktop computer in their home office, which they were a consultant and worked at home, and every incoming email had a little, you know, you've got mail. You've got mail. So they're constantly working on something, but then they had this thing where I got to open that email. I have to open the email. So get rid of that. Get rid of that. But just see, again, you can you exercise and experiment. So what happens is all you're doing in this type of meditation is bringing the mind back. That's meditation. Okay? And it's natural for us to get distracted because look at our culture. Okay? Because there is this thing created called the World Wide Web, okay? Distraction is kind of the given now for our culture. Everything is here in a box. The entire universe is available there, pretty much. Okay, so there's many things you're saying, and the distractions, it just lends to huge, the mind being very unnerved to stay still. So this is why we call it practice. We practice being still. Yeah. And also you just practice watching your mind. I watch my mind. When I said I in retreat, some days I'd get up and I'm in my session and the mind's not at all cooperative. Just not at all cooperative. So what I would do is I might back off from a very intense meditation and go back to reciting some prayers or something. You know, you can end up with diversity in practice. We have a prayer book. It has some wonderful prayers in it and they're all very different. You know, and some of them actually combine a physical exercise. So you're jumping out of your seats with ants in your pants in a session, can't sit still. That happens sometimes. So get up and do some prostrations. It really moves that energy. And you can experiment. You're finding that it's too difficult right now to sit and focus on one thing, on the breath. Then maybe Vajrasattva practice where I can recite something. Okay. So as you learn some of these techniques, if you're interested, you start to get mature in your practice to learn how to back off from a meditation or how to push a little bit that it's going well and I can stay with this for a little while, or I'm going to do this other prayer, I'm going to shift to this, and eventually the practice will take a little bit of a form, a little bit of a routine, but you can always change things up a bit so that you stay interested in it. And what you want to do when you leave a session is you want to have it desirable so that you want to go back to your cushion. You don't want to see your cushion where you're just like, forget it. I don't want to be there. So this is where the relaxation really comes in, so that your practice is happy, that you do it with a happy mind. Okay? Are we communicating? Everybody with me here? So I just wanted to kind of start with that because I know there's some newer people. And okay, so I want to talk about disturbing emotions for a moment. And two things I said when we were doing the meditation. So the mind goes off. The mind, you're sorting out your garage, you're off in some other thoughts, your lists, and stress and anxiety, as you said in the back. You're feeling anxious. Okay, so you're feeling anxious right now, and I'm going to say, but feeling anxious is not the focus of the meditation. So what I do sometimes is the thought through practice. Okay, practice makes you perfect. Practice makes you a Buddha. Okay, so you have to practice. Is I'll notice, oh, I'm getting anxious, I'm off the thing. And some people probably were in here saying to yourself, I can't meditate. Yeah. There's somebody in here that was like, I'm the only person in the room who's not meditating. Okay. Okay, it's not true. It's not true. You're just watching it in mind, and then I notice, oh, I'm just off the focus of the breath. That's all. Does that mean I'm not meditating? Actually, I am, because I just observe that I'm off the breath. And as soon as I caught myself realizing I'm off the breath and I'm distracted, oh, now I can bring my mind back to the breath. So please tell me in that, where is the problem? Okay, the problem comes in with I'm off the breath, I'm not supposed to be off the breath, I can't meditate, I'm the only one in the room that can't meditate, I can never meditate, I don't even know why I'm here. I don't deserve to be here, I'm a lousy person, it's stupid that I did this, I'm always stupid, and I don't deserve to be loved. Right? But this is where we go to this extreme simply out of habit. Out of habit. Okay, because we tell ourselves that over and over again. Because we practice that. That's all. There's no other thing. It's not that you're bad, it's just that you practice that. Angry people, and they're not really angry, they have anger in their mind, okay? They have anger in their mind and they're very familiar with that because they've practiced it a lot. People that are depressed have a lot of depression in their mind. It becomes a habit, that's all. Now I know some of these things have physiological disorders to them or physiological reasons. But we're going to break down some of these, what I'll call afflictive emotions, disturbing emotions, I'll call them delusions as well. So here's another thing. I'm off the breath, and I'm over here, and I might notice anxiety arising because I'm off the breath. I should be meditating now. But what's meditation? But I'm over here. Now I'm feeling a little anxious that I can't sit still, and you do feel some jittery stuff, and you might feel bugs crawling around your body, and you feel little electrical pulses. It's very normal when you, especially when you're first trying to meditate. We all have different energy. And now I'm over here, and I'm just noticing, let's say, the mind of anxiety, this anxious thought. So just call it that and say, thanks very much, but right now I'm meditating. So I'm just going to put you over there because I have you going on later. I can get to you later tonight. In fact, you're always kind of in there. So we're going to see each other later, but right now, this is my time to do this, back to the breath. Okay, so you have to be a little bit forceful in those spaces. If I am acknowledging right now, well, there's my mind of, there I am in my garage. Well, my garage is later. This is not what I'm doing now. So I acknowledge the thought because that's on my mind, and that's all it is, and now I'm back here, back to the breath. So what I said to you is when you're off and you notice, I said just observe. Okay, Trungpa Rinpoche says, and this works really well with anxiety and depression sometimes because it's a loop. I'm always anxious, I'm always depressed. I loop through it again, habitual pattern of that. Repeats itself, creates the next cause of that same moment. Trungpa Rinpoche says, label it, thinking. That's all it is. It's thinking. It really helps to pull that down instead of, you know, it's thinking, yeah. The thinking thought that kind of manifests as anxiety or manifests as depression, it is simply thinking. Okay, so one of the practices you can do, a technique is label it thinking. Oh, I'm thinking. Oh, or label it, oh, it's a thought. It's a thought. Sometimes we have happy thoughts, right? Sometimes they're completely negative. But still it's the same. It's a thought. That's it. You don't need, and so I said without elaboration, or judgment. Something else we can practice. Without elaboration or judgment, it's just a thought. It's just thinking. So that's something I want you to practice tonight and tomorrow morning before you come in. It's watch it go off, but without all of a sudden the sweeping mind of judgment, you know, big trip on myself, big story going on. Nope. I'll save the story for later. I'll entertain myself with that later, but right now, it's just thinking, and I'm back to the breath. And then I said, When you bring yourself back, I said, with gentleness directed towards yourself. Okay, with gentleness directed towards yourself, I will ask you to please think about that, not just this weekend, but if you can keep it going for the rest of your life, but please this weekend, that's an exercise. So I do want you to start doing some meditation. If you can get up a little bit earlier tomorrow, whether it's 5 minutes before you come in here, okay, to do just what we did this evening. Okay, but watch the mind that's going to start elaborating. And you're going to catch it, and you're going to say, okay, that's right, it's just, I don't need that story, thanks. I'm back to the breath. Okay? With gentleness directed towards yourself. You're not like, back to the breath, you jerk. No. It's back to the breath. You see the difference? It's so important. This is so important because our culture suffers from low self-esteem tremendously. Most of the people I know that come to these classes, but people that don't come to the classes suffer also from low self-esteem. Just over and over I hear people putting themselves down, demeaning themselves, feeling less worthy. And then what it does is it manifests out into your everyday reality. So there's people that not only feel like walk around like this, but there's people that are egomaniacs because of that. You know, so insecurity molts in both directions. I'm worthless, and I'm, you know, the best thing there is. Get out of my way. It's the same thing. It just comes from that insecurity that I'm not good enough. So I'd like to know if anyone relates to this. Anybody relating to what I'm saying? Okay. Why are you not good enough? Because your mom told you so. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to repeat. Somebody bullied you and told you that at some point in your life, maybe for years. Okay, so this is the time now. Spiritual practice is about checking that out. Is that accurate? Is it true? Who said that? You said that. That you're not good enough?
No, it's not for her.
Not for her? Okay, so this is about, the thing is you can't fix other people. I'm going to break that to you right now. Sorry. You can't fix and change other people. Don't bloody your head against a wall trying. I tried for many years to fix somebody in my life. Because if I fix them, everything would be okay, right? You know, if I could just fix my boss, if I could fix my husband or my wife or my kid or the person I work with or my neighbor, everything will be okay, right? Isn't that how it works? And how many people I know, I remember this woman, she came to our classes, and it was this coworker was just, you know, for 2 years it went on, this feud. And she, like, at one point she said she wished her to be dead. Right? I mean, it got really, and if she's going to leave, and I hope she gets fired. And I mean, it just went for a couple years. And she said if she was just gone, everything would be fine. Well, she got fired one day. The coworker. Great. Okay. You know, friends, party. Yay. Okay, great. And so she came in and she said she got fired. She told, you know, one day she told me, and I said, wow, well, that's going to change some things in your office. Well, they hired somebody who was exactly like her. Seriously. So the thing is, it's your mind. It's your mind. It's not out there. Okay, our culture says it's out there. Okay, Buddhism says it's your mind. Okay, to be a Buddhist, there's a characteristic they say that makes you a Buddhist. Anybody know what that is? What makes you a Buddhist? Those of you that are would call yourself a Buddhist. Some, not everybody is, but not everybody here is. But what would you say makes you a Buddhist?
An inner being.
So you're an inner being. Thank you. You're an inner being. So it's about my mind. If you fix your mind, everybody, you're friends with everybody. Okay, so keep working on that. You have to poke at the story. It's not about fixing other people. My mother my whole life told me I was crap. Okay, now I'm mature and I'm old enough to take responsibility for my life and my thoughts. And that hurt. That stuff hurt. I wish I had a mom like hers who blah, blah, blah. Okay, all that's fair enough. Okay, but now I can kind of say, am I crap? These people kind of like me. You know, it's unfortunate that that happened to me. And then through Buddhist teachings, I can look at karma to understand why I had that situation in this life. Karma says I planted seeds in the past through my body, speech, and mind. Okay? And that created me to have a certain dance this life. That caused me to have a mom like that, take rebirth this person, to be told I was crap. Have I ever told anybody else they were crap? Sometimes we have. Sometimes in this life that we remember, and Buddhism talks about past lives we don't remember. Could have happened in a past life. Yeah. And also another thing of an unfortunate situation of taking rebirth to a parent like that, whether there's emotional or physical abuse, right, can be awful for people. However, it's also seen as a type of purification. Every time you suffer, it's a type of purification. You're cleaning something out. It doesn't mean you sign up for suffering, but the thing is life is suffering, life has suffering. So when it happens, whether you have a cold, whether you break your leg, whether you're in a car accident, whether your mother hated you, okay, whether you get cancer, whether you go into recovery from the cancer, all of that can be seen as I'm getting rid of some negative thing that I created in the past. So it's a way to kind of look at, there's a beneficial side to look at it. Beneficial. I'm finishing with something now. And I'm especially finishing with it if I have my mind in the right place and have a good attitude for what's happening. Okay. But each thing is a process. So we have to be patient with ourselves to do this dance, this process. Okay. So I will bring up again about being gentle with yourself, please, to do this, and we'll fold things into the practice, but it's gently, like looking. Sometimes I just had a very unfortunate circumstance with a cement job at my father's house. I'm living with my elderly father right now. And we need, some stones had fallen down the steps, and he's too old to really deal with it, so I said I'd take it on and got the bids. And, you know, there were moments I was like the Wicked Witch of the West, is all I can say. I mean, there were moments I was like, I didn't really want to get my mouth engaged, but my thoughts were happening there along those lines of, because it was just, the guy was just, you know, unbelievable. So I was like, what are we doing? This happens for us every day. What do you want to do with it? I want to look at my mind gently and nicely and say, well, I'm like the Wicked Witch of the West here. But I didn't get down on myself. I just went like, that's not really the behavior that I want to do. This person's just like me, wants to be happy, doesn't want to suffer. He's doing a really sloppy job. I do want to make sure that we get the job done, that what we agreed to, and we'll do it, but we can do it in a nice way. And we did. We ended on a really good note. And but, you know, I just watched myself and went like, and one time I went in the house and I felt really kind of pissed off at him, and I was in the house and I was like, I don't really want to be like this, but here I am. Here I am sometimes. So instead of getting down on myself, you see the difference of all day obsessing and for the next week you're crap and you're that. I just kind of went like, yeah. Sometimes you're just depressed, right? Sometimes you're just anxious, feeling anxious. Some days are just like that. Sometimes you're in a bad mood. Yeah. So what I notice is I'll kind of watch and I'll go, well, you know, you some days you're off kilter right from the beginning, and I'll notice, and then this doesn't work, and the car didn't start, and I missed the train, and then I'll just be like, it's just like this today. Tomorrow is different, and tomorrow's always different. But rarely do I get the couple days in a row where you're really headed downhill, even though there might be some themes, similar themes. But seriously, my mind shows up differently the next day. If it goes on for too long, then I'm going to maybe need some stronger tactics. So we will talk about that as well. Okay. I want to ask, are there any questions? Yes.
My loop is the long-term physical pain and the medication. And then the depression of feeling worthless, you know, because can't deal without the medication, don't want it, but... you know, I'm feeling worthless.
Right.
I think you talked about that a second ago, so...
Yes. So, I mean, we're also going to get very... I'm going to ask you to be realistic. Buddhism is a very realistic practice. And so one of the things is, life in samsara is very challenging. Samsara is a Sanskrit word to turn, to cycle. And we're cycling through birth, old age, sickness, and death. So a lot of that is going to be suffering. Suffering shows up. It doesn't mean we have to choose it, but it's going to show up, whether it's a little thing or whether it's chronic pain, which can be really, really difficult. So what happens is, fortunately in our culture, there is something as medication that can help me manage the chronic pain. So your decision is there anything you can do about the chronic pain? You know, can it be fixed? Sometimes not. So then I have to kind of accept, wow, I'm going to have this for the rest of my life. How do I want to manage it? Well, there is a pain medication. Some of them do heavy-duty things to the liver and other parts of the body. So can I balance it so that I've got a little bit of the edge taken off? And then I also know meditations that are really, really good for pain. So some people go in to try to locate exactly where the pain is. You know, does it have a shape, a form, a color? How big is it? How small is it? Can you move the pain around? And then there's light, different light you can bring in that sometimes shifts the pain and dissolves it. You can imagine it dissolving. Vajrasattva practice can be incredibly powerful for people in chronic pain. And Tonglen meditation. We'll see. I'd like to try to get to Tonglen meditation as well, if we can. Giving and taking meditation. So it's a little bit of a higher level practice. But the thing is, if I have to be in pain, what if I just imagined in my pain, because I'm going to be in pain the rest of my life, you might say, I'm going to take on and just going to have this thought, I will take on everybody else who's in pain chronically, and I'm going to take on their pain in my pain and let them be free from their pain. It's just a thought, and you can do it visualized on the breath. I inhale, I take that from them, visualizing whatever images you'd like, and as I exhale, I release and give them comfort, happiness, freedom from pain. Again, this is just an attitude. You do not take on more of their pain, not at our level. You don't take on somebody's cancer. You don't take on somebody's migraine headache. It's just simply your attitude. If you do nothing else in this life as a spiritual practitioner, but you can get yourself patterned to learn Tonglen meditation and really get very familiar where it's very familiar in your mind a lot of the day, I think when you're dying, I think it'd be fantastic. I mean, if that's what's going on in your mind, and if you have a slow death and you can think about Tonglen meditation, I think you'd be quite peaceful dying like that. So those are a few things about the pain. And so what happens is that's all you can do about it. So what's the point of adding on top of it, I'm worthless? You know, it doesn't benefit anybody. Doesn't benefit anybody. And there's a tremendous amount of purification people can do being in chronic pain, that they must be sweeping something out, and maybe later this life, maybe next life, I'm free. Like that. Other questions? Yes.
If I have a thought, I'm focusing on my breath, and I have a thought over here, and it comes. What do you think of this? I think of sort of clouds, like the thought is here, and I just sort of go, and it flies away.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If that works for you, and we are going to talk about, and I can get into this in a moment, we have a little bit more time, about delusions arising as clouds in the mind. If you have a technique and you want to just... I have people sometimes with bubbles. You know, bubbles? They're just, thoughts are like that. So, and the mind can be equated to the clear blue sky, as well as a calm mountain pond, calm mountain lake. And you know how sometimes all of a sudden a ripple, there's a little bubble, fish comes up, and then it goes, boop, 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 ripple, and then, back into the lake. That's what our thoughts are like. They come up and then they go, and then they go back down. They go back into the consciousness from where they came. So clear blue sky, when you really are lie down on a hillside and look up and there's no obstruction, there's nothing. And then a cloud comes in, little puffy, and you watch it and it takes form, right? takes a certain, and then you watch it change, but just like a thought. And then all of a sudden it's gone. And then occasionally, like a moment ago, we had a bank of rain clouds came in. And there was thunder and lightning, and it was all very exciting. I love that. I lived in California so many years. Sometimes in July, I'd be like, just rain one drop, please. I'm from the East Coast. You know, I love seasons. California, and now it's worse than ever, right? It's so dry. But we didn't like thunder. We didn't have thunder and lightning there. And also, when it did come, occasionally it was very dangerous because it started fires. But here you have, so all of a sudden, the clear blue sky was totally obscured. So when you're raging in anger, when you're super attached, no clear blue sky. It's just, I need that thing. Give it to me. And so that's the heavy bank of rain clouds. Obscures my mind, your mind like the clear blue sky. And then if you have a technique where you can blow them, I just wouldn't get too engaged in meditation where if you're sitting where you're like, you know. But if you have an image where and you can get rid of them, fantastic. I think it's a great way to do it. Yeah, very helpful. Okay, so let me talk a little bit more about delusion. And I mentioned the clear blue sky, and we will do some meditations tomorrow on the nature of the mind, just so that you get a sense of the mind. I'm just curious, how many of you are familiar with mind in Tibetan Buddhism and have done maybe the Discovering Buddhism course, Mind and Its Potential, or you're somewhat familiar and have had classes? How many people? So not so many. Okay. So what do you think? Then we have to talk about the mind a little bit, okay? So just indulge me, those of you that are familiar. So those of you not familiar, give me some characteristics of your mind, please. What do you think your mind's like? Some experience. You're in meditation. What's happening? What do you feel like your mind in general? Anybody?
Racing.
Bracing? Racing. Racing mind?
Polluted.
Full.
An elephant.
It's an elephant. Okay. Okay. Those of you familiar with the mind stuff in Buddhism, and I'm going to add this thing for you. If you're not familiar, the mind in Tibetan Buddhism, I will give another synonym, consciousness. So it is not the brain. It's not the brain. It's not physical, has no shape, no form, no smell. You cannot hold it in your hand. It's not physical, it's immaterial, the mind. Consciousness. Okay? This is different for us. We're like, what do you mean, the mind then? Where is it? What's it like? Okay, the mind in Tibetan Buddhism is located here at the heart center. Not the organ, the heart, because that's physical. But there's a subtle energy system in our body. Not something you can cut the body open and see. Or I don't know, maybe Robbie can tell us that you can. I don't know. Okay. So there's a subtle energy system that works through our bodies and creates a whole system run by wind through our body. Okay, and the mind has a way that it connects with that energy, but it's not that energy, but it has a way that it moves through our system. And they say that where it's fundamentally in its most subtle level connects with that most subtle wind energy, which is more physical in nature, at the heart, at the kind of center of our core, it exists there in what's called an energy center called a chakra. And we have these energy centers at our crown. Okay, at the forehead, at the crown, at the throat, at the heart, navel and sexual organs. And there's different winds there that move out. So when a fetus is developing, let's say a human fetus is developing, okay, these winds start to move out. And there's first the most subtle wind. Okay, and we know this in other spiritualities. In the Chinese system, it's called qi. In the Hindu Ayurvedic system, prana. In the Tibetan system, lung, wind. It's physical in basis, in nature. It's what allows conception to take place, that energy. Okay, and at that moment, that it's inseparable with the mind, but it's not the mind. The mind attaches to it. So they're attached, but they're separate. Okay, and it's that mind that connects with that wind energy that starts to dictate how that body's going to form. how the brain's going to function. Okay? So I just want to give you some idea. This is, I know this is a stretch for some of us when we first learn about it because we think of the brain. Okay, but just have this idea that something separate from the brain, something separate from my body. Something separate from my body. As a result of it being separate from my body, when my body dies, when it degenerates, what happens with the mind? Like, so the Tibetan Buddhism system then gives this possibility that the mind can separate from this wind energy, doesn't stay with a decaying body, and it's going to go on and take other forms. And I'm going to talk about that. If we don't get today, we will talk about that tomorrow. So I just wanted to mention, those of you that have had the mind course and are familiar with mind in Tibetan Buddhism, and we heard about the mind is full, and my mind is racing, and my mind is like an elephant, and the other things that people said, what is actually, there's two characteristics Tibetan Buddhism says that it make up, that is your mind. What are they? It's clear and knowing. What do you think of that? It's clear and it's knowing. It has a clear light nature, clarity, like a reflective quality. Okay, it reflects things back, the mind. Is everybody with me? Mm-hmm. Reflects things back. We take in information. It's reflecting stuff back to me. The second part of it is, it understands, it has an awareness of what's reflected back. It's clear and it's knowing. That's it. That's your mind. So you're like, well, what's it full of? What is the elephant made up of? Why? What's it racing through? What's it racing through? So I first want you to take tonight, go back, I want you to think about the clear, knowing nature of your mind. I want you to get a little sense of any clarity that you experience in your mind. There are moments of clarity in between the racing and the elephant and the fullness and the clutter and the garbage and whatever like that. There's some clarity in there. And then I want you to notice tonight what you're aware of, how the mind's aware of things. How you know to put your key in the door for the car, you know? How you're aware of all these things. How I know this is a glass with water, how I know how to use it. Awarenesses. But can you also, those of you that have been doing this for a while, okay, because we're at different levels in the class, can you step back from some of the awarenesses and just notice that the nature of the glass, the shape of it, can I even go back to kind of look at it on kind of, well, it's the structure that has this, so it's an open thing here and it holds liquid. And can I notice just the colors before I really see the whole brocade tapestry together? See what I'm saying? Because it gives you a little bit better sense of your mind. And that's what helps you control negative emotions. So we're going to talk about the mind in the beginning tomorrow as we move through some of this. So you've got your meditation to do tonight. One thing I want you to do when you... we did the how you start the morning motivation. In the evening, what I want you to do is when you go to bed, the last thing as you're lying down before you go to bed is we need to have a motivation for sleeping. Okay, so we need to sleep for health, to rest our body and mind. And you can think, I hope I sleep well tonight, and I hope I get rested. And what I'd like to do is get rested. I really hope that I wake up refreshed tomorrow morning so that I can attend this class or do whatever I'm going to do tomorrow with good energy so that I can get some information and put this into practice that will help me move along a path to full awakening as quickly as I can because I really would like to help other beings. So with the thought of benefiting others, now I'm going to practice the yoga of sleeping. Okay, then your sleep can be virtuous. So an exercise for you is if you'd like to do that, great. The catch is going to be remembering to do it. That's another thing. Okay. And in the morning, what I'd ask is we did some morning, talked about some morning practice. But you can even start when you are lying in bed as you're waking up, whether you wake up with an alarm or naturally, is let's wake up, you know, and suddenly you realize you're coming into consciousness and you're awake in the life that you have now. Now, I don't know all your lives. And I know we all have our problems and different pain and ailments and things like that, and mental suffering as well. However, I just have some sense of waking up in this part of the world. We wake up in probably safe, comfortable beds with shelter. There's probably food in the refrigerator. We have a relatively healthy body and mind. The fact that you got yourself here tonight, rejoice. Okay? So there's so many advantages we have. And we're not waking up with my dear sisters and brothers in Nepal after these earthquakes, and it's been horrible for them. And people in other parts of the country, I mean other parts of the world, you can imagine. Okay, that's not our situation. We have a good situation here. It is not perfect. Okay, so do you ever have a moment to appreciate that? I do it when I'm lying in bed in the morning. I don't hit the snooze. That's a waste of time. Okay, but I wake up and I don't get out of bed right. I don't jump out of bed, but I lie there and I'm like, whoa. You know, here I'm still here. I'm like, I'm in this life. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm still in my body, my mind, my life. So I breathe it in and I just feel that gratitude right down to the molecular level. I let it soak into all my cells. Gratitude. Try that tomorrow morning. Because that cuts low self-esteem, and that chips away at all the negative emotions. Do you ever rejoice? Do you ever have gratitude? Deeply. Give yourself a couple minutes. Oh, fantastic. So grateful. I'm so grateful that I have this comfortable bed. I'm so grateful that I have a loving family, that I have shelter over my head, that I can turn on the tap and I can drink the water that comes out. That's a luxury in a lot of countries. That there's electricity, okay, that I can wash, that I have clothes to put on. I mean, just get creative. Get creative. So gratitude, and then you can set a motivation, and then you get up. So we're going to work here. We have some work to do. So please ask if you can possibly, please try to do that. I hope some of you are coming back tomorrow. And we have, I think it's 9 to 3:30 tomorrow. Is that right? With a break for lunch?
10 to 3:30.
So, 10 to 10? Okay. Was it always 10? Yeah?
No, it was
10. 10,
Sunday's 9.
Sunday's 9. Okay, so tomorrow's 10 to 3:30. And then Sunday's 9 to noon. I think 9 to noon. Okay. I do hope you can come back. What I'd like to do, and thank you for coming, I'd like to dedicate any positive energy that we have created from being here together. And I'd just like to take it invested in our being able to do these exercises and remember to do them this evening and tomorrow morning. And that I really hope you'll get some information on starting to cut some of the negative emotions and working with it. May it help all of us to proceed along a path to full awakening, as then we are completely unlimited in helping all other beings. I'd like to dedicate in that way. And I'd also like to dedicate to all those around the planet with incredibly challenging health, to be healed, to have some sense of relief for their ailments, and for all the conflicts in the world to be pacified instantly. Thank you very much, and I'd really like to thank the Supreme Court of the United States for, right? Fantastic. Two major decisions today, both very positive, I thought, so I hope you think they're positive as well. I think it was very exciting about gay marriage, and the health care bill, I think, was key for many people in Pennsylvania. I know were very challenged with that. They would have dropped insurance, I think. And Pennsylvania was actually working on changing it, but many states. So I think a couple exciting things today. So thank you, and I hope to see you tomorrow. I hope this is helpful. Thank you.
Venerable Amy, may I read the dedications
yes.
and sponsors?
Oh, please, yes. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Susie Baum, for the continued health and well-being of our generous teachers. Thank you for your kindnesses. Jill Marie, may the words that enter our ears also enter our hearts and bless our minds so that we may be vehicles of change for all sentient beings to achieve enlightenment. Pat Long, dedicated to helping Venerable Amy Miller feel welcome at the Kadampa Center and to the long and healthy life of all faithful teachers of Dharma. Amanda Henry, to the long, healthy, happy lives of Venerable Amy, our own Geshe Gelug, Geshe Sangpo, Venerable Lama, Venerable Cherki, and Venerable Kondo, and all the Sangha and members of the FPMT. May all the centers continue to grow and flourish, spreading the Dharma all over the world, helping many reach enlightenment quickly. Sandy Carlson, may the wishes of Lama Zompa, Rinpoche, Geshe Gelug, Geshe Sangpo, Venerable Amy Miller, and all our wonderful teachers to help bring the teachings from our head to our heart be fulfilled. May our teachers live long, healthy, happy lives. May the Kadampa Center continue to flourish in the Dharma. May all sentient beings obtain an ocean of happiness and joy.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to mention, if you're not coming back, how many are coming back this weekend? Okay, well, we're all here then. Okay. I just wanted to mention, this is a flyer. Thank you so much for printing this out. If you're interested, I forgot to bring more of these, but I can give you this information. So our center, we're connected to a center all over the world, but one in New York City. They don't have a place, Shanti Deva Meditation Center. So I teach up there a lot because I'm in Philadelphia. And, well, not a lot, but I do go up there at times. And they wanted to do an actual weekend retreat. And so they booked Garrison Institute, which is just a 70-minute train ride north of the city. It's a beautiful place. There's a picture of it here. They wanted to do a Lam Rim retreat. So for those of you that have done some of the courses and been, it's going to be amazing. And it's hot down here in July. So you should go to upstate New York. But this is information about it. So I'm going to leave it here. You can get information. It's also connected to my website, amymiller.com, if you're interested in other places I teach. But I really can't recommend this enough. And I know some of you have been practicing enough. And what happens is we don't meditate on this stuff. We don't do retreat on all the things Geshe has been teaching and all the things the teacher has been teaching. This is what Lama Zopa Rinpoche wants us to do. It's just a weekend. And if you have a little holiday and you want to build in a little trip, and you could join us on the train or whatever. We'll have our little Dharma train, right? But it's really going to be fantastic. And this is one of my favorite things to lead are these Lam Rim meditations. So I just wanted to mention that to people. I think you have pilgrimage cards for this. Did they send some or no?
Yes, you told me that it's...
So we've canceled. Yeah, there's not a Burmese pilgrimage because I thought they had the cards. We're not going to do that in September, but I would... recommend this, and I could give you my website as well if you're interested. So thanks very much.